97.9 FM, WCHL, and University Square present Side Dish, hosted by Deborah Miller. Side Dish, featuring 30 minutes of tasty talk with local chefs, culinary experts, and more. Side Dish is brought to you by University Square, local and legendary shopping and dining in downtown Chapel Hill. University Square, see you there. Now, here's your host for Side Dish, Deborah Miller.
Welcome to Side Dish. I'm Deborah Miller. One of my favorite people is sitting across from me this morning, Sherry Castle, author of the New Southern Garden Cookbook and authoress of so many things, of your own fate, your own life. I just love you.
Welcome. I love you too. Thank you.
I was so good to see you the other night at the monthly CHOP meeting, which is Culinary Historians of the Piedmont.
Yes, one of the greatest groups in our state. We're so lucky it's right here in Chapel Hill.
We are. And you guys, if you haven't been, it's a wonderful organization started by our friend Nancy McDermott. And can you talk about it at all?
Sure. It's a group of people. Some of us are in the culinary business, but some people are just avid cooks or avid eaters or like history. But the idea is that we're going to explore some of the food issues and food characters and food ways right here in our own backyard.
It's wonderful. And people always bring food. There's always a scheduled guest, and Sherry was our scheduled guest this past week, and you were just so delightful. And you tell stories in such an amusing and poignant way.
Well, thank you. You know, the highest compliment I can be paid, and the way I actually think about myself is I'm a storyteller.
You are.
And I often tell stories about food, but that thank you for acknowledging that you enjoy what I do.
Yeah, I was trying to think if I had ever heard you just talk before, sit and talk. I mean, yeah, we've talked on the radio, but no, you were telling stories and you were talking about growing up in the mountains and what that meant. So all the listeners out there, y'all were not there on Wednesday night. So will you just sort of go over that whole thing about the mountains and what y'all ate?
Exactly. I grew up in Watauga County, which is where Boone is, where Appalachian State University is. A lot of people know that location. But when I was growing up, it was still very rural, very mountain isolated. And we lived off the land, as a lot of people did, and our food was simple and seasonal and so forth. But the main things that we ate were cabbage, which we grew both for our family use and for a commercial farming enterprise. Mm-hmm. We ate lots of potatoes, and these were white potatoes that we called Irish potatoes. Actually, my grandparents pronounced it Arsh potatoes.
Did they?
Yeah, Arsh taters. And we ate a lot of dried beans, pinto beans in particular that we called soup beans, and cornbread. Those were sort of our foundation foods. And then my grandmother kept a huge garden that had corn and green beans and tomatoes and cucumbers, you know, what you would expect. But because the mountains have a different growing climate, our food is separate from most Southern food. There's some overlap, but there are very iconic Southern foods like okra and field peas and things like that that I had never tasted until I came down to Chapel Hill to go to college.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, if it didn't grow up there, we didn't eat it.
What about meats?
Meats, you know, it was typical of the times. We would have a little bit of meat through the week, but our big meat meals were Sunday dinner. And, you know, we had fried chicken. We had some beef roasts and so forth, but beef was not a big part of it. Some pork, like pork chops and things. But meat was kind of a Sunday thing. Through the week, we ate a lot of what now people call vegetable plates, which is just a huge variety of wonderful vegetables and pickles and put-up things and hot bread and so forth. And about the only people that got meat through the week were growing teenage boys that are about to starve half to death. And they might have got a little fried bologna once in a while to go with it.
And there's nothing wrong with fried bologna.
There's nothing wrong with that. Exactly. It amuses me that in the last couple of years, I've gone to some really posh parties, and one of the past hors d'oeuvres was, quote, bologna sandwiches, you know, some sort of hope bologna sandwich.
Don't you love that?
I do. Matter of fact, I put on Facebook not long ago, somebody served me a mortadella panini, and it was a bologna sandwich. Yeah. Mortadella is Italian bologna.
It is. Well, so this show is going to air on Easter. What was a typical Easter dinner?
We did have a ham. We had the typical Easter ham. And for us, you know, we ate a lot of country ham, but Easter ham meant a fresh ham, you know, a cured, mm-hmm. you know, ham that my grandmother roasted and so forth. But one thing that was particular to us is in mountains, you did not eat rice every day. I think that depending on where you are in the South, you had your daily starch. And for some yep. people, that was potatoes, some grits, and some rice. Rice was a special occasion food for us. And another thing about the way we ate it in the mountains, we thickened it. We almost creamed it like a creamed vegetable. So it was thickened with a little bit of...
Like risotto.
Like risotto. Exactly is the way we ate it. And for Easter to go with a ham, my grandmother folded brown sugar and crushed pineapple into it. And, you know, your analogy to risotto is perfect. The texture was almost like a slightly sweet hot pineapple risotto that went with that ham. And it is wonderful. And I still make it to this day.
I was going to ask if you said
it. I do. I love that stuff. And when I do it, I buy the canned milk. Like, she always used like pet or carnation milk in a can for it. And, you know, there is a particular richness and slight sweetness to that. So I bring it out and you stir it up in a skillet and it's wonderful stuff.
Do you still make it?
I do still make it. Matter of fact, I had not thought about it in a very long time, but about 5 or 6 years ago, I was doing a project for the Southern Foodways Alliance. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about the way rice is treated throughout the South. And I thought nobody is talking about mountain rice. And so I did the recipe for them, and then I've been making it ever since. It took me a day or two to figure out to get it to taste just like hers, and the canned milk was the key.
Was it really? In canned pineapple?
In canned pineapple, because there was no fresh pineapple up there. But, you know, sometimes, like, if you think about pineapple upside down cake, you can make it with fresh, but it's much better with canned. Sometimes there's a thing that it tastes the way it's supposed to because of the way it comes along.
Well, so will you be making that this weekend, do you think?
You know, I hadn't thought about it, but now that we're talking about it, you better believe it. I've got me a hunger for it now.
Well, so is that recipe, we're going to have to go to break here in just a second, but before we go, is that recipe going to show up in a cookbook somewhere, you think?
I think it should.
I think it should, too. Maybe we need to do a mountain.
We'll talk about that.
I have got tons of questions about the mountain stuff, because you talked a lot about that at CHOP, and so I want to go there when we come back. We're talking with Sherry Castle, author of the new Southern Garden Cookbook. Web address?
SherryCastle.com.
And it's a beautiful site. Y'all go look at it. You are listening to Side Dish on 97.9 FM, WCHL. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Need your local culture fix? The Lifestyle section of chapelboro.com is the only place to go for food and dining, restaurant views, health tips, fashion, and local culture commentary. Want to know what the best shows and venues to attend? Lifestyle has show listings for Deepak, Cat's Cradle, and the Art Center, and many more. And be sure to check back after the show for reviews and commentary. There's even information on local neighborhoods and schools. Keep yourself in style with Chapelboro's Lifestyle.
We now return to Side Dish, brought to you by University Square. Unique, locally owned shops with free parking in downtown Chapel Hill. University Square. See you there. Once again, your host on WCHL, Deborah Miller.
Welcome back to Side Dish. I'm Deborah Miller. Around my table is Sherry Castle, and we're talking about North Carolina foods and traditions, Southern traditions, and you were telling a story the other night about pickles.
About pickles. Yes.
Will you tell? That just cracked me up.
This is definitely not a mountain thing. I was down in the Delta of Mississippi doing some work stuff, and there was a bunch of us riding around the dusty, hot roads of the Delta in a rented Crown Victoria, and we came up to this little country store, and on the counter next to the cash register was this enormous glass jar full of pickles, except they had drained off the brine that the pickles came in and refilled it with sweet red Kool-Aid. And they put those pickles back in that sweet red drink and soaked them, and they called them Kool-Ickles. Kool-Aid pickles.
Don't you just love that?
I love that. And we actually, once we noticed them, started seeing them in other small stores and so forth, country stores. Mm-hmm. Usually red Kool-Aid. Occasionally you might see orange or grape Kool-Aid, but mainly red. It wasn't anything I care to eat again, but I'm really glad I ate it that time. I think it's one of those things, if I'd grown up with it, I'd love it. But it has this sort of cult following now. And a friend of mine wound up writing about it that wound up in the New York Times. And now this practice is showing up in some kind of like foodways archives and oral histories. Uh-huh. But I mean, it's resource. It's making a lot out of a little, which is sort of the common thread.
Well, it is. Do you like researching traditions, food traditions?
I love that more than anything. That is my favorite form of cultural anthropology, because mm-hmm. I believe it was true then and it's true now. If you want to know what people value, what their priority is, what they think and so forth, it comes down to what people eat. And, you know, there's been a lot of homogenization across the United States, but there are still pockets of intensely local authenticity. And I think that, you know, that's as worth studying as much as, you know, folk music or folk art or anything else. But these things count.
Well, everybody has to eat.
Everybody has to eat.
It's the common denominator.
Right. And, you know, even now, every bite we take is the result of a decision about something.
Well, that's true. I hadn't thought of that. That's a nice way to say it.
Yeah. And so it fascinates me.
Well, one of the things that you talked about on Wednesday night was fermentation
yes.
of foods.
Yes.
And so that's kind of a particular love of yours.
It is a love of mine. And it's coming back. In the last couple of years, there are people starting to be practitioners of fermentation again. I grew up with it. It was
very
common.
We're not talking about making beer, y'all.
No. No. My people did not make beer. There's nothing wrong with that. But I can assure you, my Southern Baptist family did not make beer. But I'm talking about things. The most obvious one would be sauerkraut. I mean, I don't think there's anyone that doesn't know what sauerkraut is. But sauerkraut is a fermented food. In the mountains, we fermented other things. There's a small number of counties in western North Carolina and eastern Tennessee that ferment string beans, green beans, and sometimes it's just the beans. Sometimes it's mixed with corn, and sometimes we ferment only the corn, and that can be cut off the cob or whole cobs of corn. And by fermenting, it's not with vinegar. It's not a pickling process. It is a time-lapse thing. You start out with the food product, with mm-hmm. salt and with water. And
a brine.
Exactly. And, you know, it's a controlled rot, for lack of a better word. And it is, the longer it goes, the more salty and sour it gets, just like sauerkraut. So if you can imagine something where kernels of corn or links of green bean or something have that kind of salty, sour, astringent wonderfulness of sauerkraut, that's what it's like. And, you know, we ate this because it was a way to preserve things, but we now know, I mean, we've been told this by, you know, people that study these things, it was our version of Activia. Fermented food build up the beneficial flora in our gut, and it keeps us healthy. And so, you know, they tasted good, but it was doing us some good, too.
Well, I didn't even thought of it like that. Mm-hmm. So did you say that you have a fermentation rock?
Oh, I do. Yeah.
Well, what's
I gotta
up with
explain.
That?
Now, fermentation, when I do it, I often do it just in, you know, a restaurant Lexan, a restaurant grade plastic vessel. But my grandmother used crockery, these old crocks, I think were her grandmother's. Mm-hmm. And you layer the food in it and you put the water and salt, but you have to put something on top to hold the food under the water line, because if it gets exposed to air,
right.
it will rot. So you had to keep it under. Well, a lot of people had rocks, these wide, flat dinner plate shaped rocks that were about 3/4 inch thick that they got out of the New River, the river that runs through my part of the mountains. Mm-hmm. And all it was a way to weight down the food, although some of the old timers swore that there was natural minerals in those rocks, mm-hmm. just like they were very particular about where they got the water. To this day, you cannot use chlorinated tap water. It won't work. You have to have, you know, distilled water or filtered water in some way. So, you know, once you got a good rock, you boiled it every year and held it under. And, you know, who am I to question this? If my grandmother thought that rock was important, who am I to say that it's not?
So you have one. Do you have her rock?
I have her rock. I have her rock and her crocks. And I usually do not put my food in a cotton sack. Some people used cotton sacks, like
that
an old pillowcase, that they did to hold the food in that just so they could submerge the whole sack. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I do that and sometimes I don't. But when I get invited to speak about this, and my grandmother would think it was hilarious that I am being invited all over the country to talk about this humble thing, I always take the rock. I mean, you know, it's my talisman.
So you put it in your suitcase and uh-huh. it weighs 25 pounds and they're
actually, probably doesn't weigh more than three.
Does it fit exactly inside the...
It does. And, you know, people would look for the right kind of rock because, you know, you didn't want it too heavy. You didn't want it to break the crock. And the main thing is it had to have a diameter that was very similar to the diameter of the vessel so that things wouldn't sneak up around the edge.
Well, that's pretty amazing.
It is pretty amazing.
I don't know how you... How did you figure all this stuff out?
I don't know.
I just did.
I just did because it meant something to me. I mean, this was my family's history. It was my people's history. It was our mountain history. And it meant something to me. And, you know, foodways go extinct, just like other things. And if somebody like me and a few other people don't keep it going, if you don't eat it, you cannot save it.
Well, I love you for that. So we got to run to break. Don't go away. You're listening to Side Dish on 97.9 FM WCHL. And I'm talking with Sherry Castle.
Scarlet, it's over. I'm leaving.
Rhett, if you go, where shall I go and what shall I do?
Frankly, my dear, chapelboro.com. You can find photo galleries, daily columns, news and sports, Chapelboro's best, all that and more every day.
Oh, Rhett, with the comprehensive community calendar as my witness, I will never go hungry again.
We now return to Side Dish, brought to you by University Square, local and legendary downtown shopping and dining. Now welcomes KidZoo Children's Museum. See you there. Download this and all episodes of Side Dish from WCHL's website, chapelboro.com. Once again, here's Deborah Miller.
Welcome back to Side Dish. I'm talking with Sherry Castle, and what are you currently working on? Didn't I hear you mention magazine stuff?
It is. I have been lucky that I have done, I'm a freelancer, so I write for all sorts of people, but I've been doing quite a bit of magazine work, and three things that are definite enough that I can talk about for sure is, in, I believe, the May issue, I'm going to be in Southern Living.
Nice.
Yes, they hired me to do some recipes, and there'll be something coming out. I don't know if I can say what, but some recipes coming out in Southern Living.
Uh-huh.
And then I am doing, there's a magazine called The Local Palette.
Uh-huh.
It's based in Charleston, but it's talking about food all over the South. And I'm doing a very, very long article for them that will be in their August, September issue on field peas. Yeah. Peas. My working title, which I hope they keep, although it's not my decision, is A Field Guide to Field Peas. So I'm working on that. It'll be a lot of recipes, a lot of photography, you know, a big piece. And then I, although it is an online thing, a website, I write for NPR. There's a site called Kitchen Window, and it is national NPR based out of Washington, D.C., about food of all kinds. And so for those of us that love food and food stories, you know, people should read Kitchen Window. It comes out about once a week, and I'm writing some new pieces for them. The first one that's going to come out in April will be on little green peas, little spring garden peas.
Ooh, and I'm trying to get her to write some stuff for North Carolina Folklife Institute for our blog, NC Food. And hope that you will see her name coming up soon. And we should talk about all the ways we can get you to make a ton of money.
I'm all for that.
So any books bubbling around back there?
Oh, you know, I'm kind of mulling around one a little bit and so forth. I had sworn I would never write another, but I guess that wasn't really true. So I tell people with complete honesty, I'm almost sort of kind of ready to think about another one.
I like that. Well, you know, I think everybody who's ever written one has said, that's it. And then they go for about 6 months. And then I think there's some addiction to the process.
There is some addiction to the process. And I will forever be grateful for the opportunities this book gave me. I mean, not only in terms of, you know, what the book itself, but other writing and speaking opportunities. I mean, it really was a life changer for me.
This has been wonderful. I am so glad that I bumped into you the other night at CHOP, and look forward to seeing you there next month. It's the third Wednesday of every month at Flyleaf Books at 7 o'clock.
Right.
You need to come back.
I'll come back any old time.
Regular.
You betcha.
Regular.
Regular-like.
Thank you. I've been talking with Sherry Castle, author of the new Southern Garden Cookbook, storyteller, all-around great babe. And you've been listening to Side Dish on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Thanks for listening to Side Dish. Tasty talk with culinary aficionados, wine connoisseurs, and more. Side Dish is brought to you by University Square, local and legendary shopping and dining in downtown Chapel Hill. University Square, see you there. Download this and all episodes of Side Dish from WCHL's website, chapelboro.com. Side Dish is an exclusive broadcast of 97.9 FM, WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel station.